from Wondery, I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And this is Even the Rich. Over the last four episodes, we've been following the journey from Diana to Meghan, two commoners who made a lasting mark on the British monarchy.
I feel like that's an understatement. They were revolutionaries.
Well, to wrap up our series, we're joined by two very special guests.
Prince Harry and Meghan Markle?
Oh my God, wouldn't that be great? But no, you're going to be talking to a very special guest.
I am. Her name is Michaela Friel, and she's a royal reporter at Insider, which means she pretty much knows more about Megxit than Harry and Meghan do.
And then you're going to tell me the biggest takeaway from your chat.
I've got my notepad out.
But first, I'm going to be talking to Frank Langfitt. He's NPR's London correspondent who fell into reporting on the royals. And like us, he became totally fascinated by what he learned.
And then we'll have a chat about your takeaway.
We will. Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm fine, Brooke. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining us. We're very excited to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So as everyone can hear, you are American, but you're now based in London. When you started covering the royals, what kind of struck you the most about them?
Well, I think, you know, what's interesting about them is they're very hard to cover in a conventional way because they don't talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole idea is to sort of create this mystery around them. Like, in a sense, they're really ordinary, right? They're not super well educated. They don't have normal jobs. And so what they need to do is sort of present this image that they are otherworldly. But in order to also do that, they can't seem ordinary. And so they can't do a lot of interviews. So it's this very tricky balance that they try to strike. And so, I mean, for instance, you almost never hear the Queen speak, except she gives her Christmas addresses, which the last one actually was great. I never thought I would watch the Queen's Christmas address, but it was really well done.
200 years on from the birth of my great-great-grandmother, Queen Victoria, Prince Philip and I have been delighted to welcome our eighth great-grandchild into our family.
And so it's this very kind of tricky dance, and it's very orchestrated to still have this royal air and not let people know too much about you. And it sort of seems almost from an earlier era.
So walk us through how it works with them. Like, you know, what are the layers around them? Do they have press teams or spokespeople? Like, who's standing between the press and the royals?
A lot. They have their own press teams, but they don't give press conferences. They will leak stuff. And I think Princess Diana was a past master of this. Like, there's a lot of focus on the fact that she was hounded by the press, but she also was a master, frankly, manipulator of the press. And she was leaking to people, and she had her favorites, and she was able to frame the story very well, particularly when she was getting divorced from Prince Charles all those years ago. I think Diana was incredibly shrewd in many ways, and I think she won people over with her personality and a lot like her son, Harry. People see a lot of Diana in Harry. She had to basically work the press in various ways. And she would set up paparazzi shots. She even did one-on-one television interviews, which at the time I think were pretty much unheard of, where she just laid it all out.
Do you think Mrs. Parker Bowles was a factor in the breakdown of your marriage?
Well, there were three of us in this marriage, so it was a bit crowded.
And that was her way to kind of outflank the palace and make sure her image was the one that really stuck in people's minds. And then, of course, in 1997, when she died in that car crash in Paris, the outpouring was unbelievable. You know, carpets and carpets of flowers in front of Kensington Palace. And even the British were surprised. You know, they're not like Americans.
Right.
They don't wear their heart on their sleeve. They don't cry. They do kind of keep their emotions inside. And it was this enormous outpouring for her that really shocked people, including the Queen, who had no idea that people would respond this way. She stayed up at Windsor, actually at Windsor Castle, did not come down for a number of days and came under a lot of criticism for that.
Yeah. How did the rest of the royal family handle that kind of outpouring of support aside from the Queen?
I think at that time, I think it was tricky for Prince Charles. He was trying to shield his boys, mm-hmm. naturally. And I think it's interesting because if we want to understand kind of like where Harry fits into all of this, I think it's good to remember what happened to him. He was pretty much forced at a very young age, I guess he would have been maybe 10 or something, to walk behind the casket.
Yes, yeah.
Coming out of, I think this is St. James's, preparing to join behind the cortege. It's Charles, William and Harry, Earl Spencer. Prince Philip is there as well.
Certainly the most heartbreaking sight.
And to this day, he says that this was something that should have never been done to a child. I think it's very clear from his conversations that he deeply resented it. And it scarred him. If you want to understand a bit of Harry's relationship to the family, that would probably be a signal moment as to why he's never really bought into this whole thing in a lot of ways. He doesn't fit in. And he's also very different than a lot of the other members of the immediate royal family.
You mentioned that people see a lot of Harry and Diana. Can you expand on that a little? I mean, I know we've kind of seen they're both kind of free spirits, I would say.
Well, I think, you know, for one thing, his place is very different. So they have an expression here in the United Kingdom that there's the heir, who's William, and the spare, who's Harry. And so Harry doesn't really have a role, in a sense.
Right.
He's not going to become king. And it's not really clear exactly what he's going to do. And like his mom, he's a bit iconoclastic, very much a free spirit, and very, very personable and sociable. Before Megxit occurred, he and the Queen were easily the most popular people in the royal family. People in the United Kingdom feel like he's their kid or their nephew, and they've watched him grow up and mature, and they really feel like he's one of theirs. So they're also very protective of him. And that's very interesting to watch.
Oh, okay. That's very interesting. Would you say Harry is your favorite royal? I don't know if you're allowed to have favorites or if you can really say.
You know, I mean, I could lose my job as NPR's occasional royals reporter by taking sides.
Yeah.
I admire the Queen for her staying power. We do write advance obituaries. And so I did a lot of research and I interviewed people. And the Queen has been through a lot.
Yeah.
She never expected to become queen. She wasn't in line to the throne. It was a surprise. World War II, Suez, and then the problems with her family, which, I mean, persist, which is one of the reasons we're talking right now. Mm-hmm. So I admire her staying power. And I think when she passes away, it's going to hit this country and going to hit the world like a ton of bricks.
All righty. So let's kind of turn to the present here. The Windsors, I mean, they've had a pretty crazy year with, you know, Prince Andrew and his relationship with Epstein and, of course, Harry and Meghan leaving. Can you just kind of walk us through all that's happened very recently?
Sure. It's been an unbelievable year. So the real problems began with Prince Andrew, which was not that long ago. And, you know, with Jeffrey Epstein, they had a pretty long relationship. He liked Jeffrey Epstein very much. He loved going to Epstein's parties. Epstein brought in lots of different interesting people from all different walks of life, which was part of his attraction. And Andrew was drawn to that. The big problem came after Epstein went to jail and then Epstein hung himself. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of pressure on Andrew to just talk about, well, what was this relationship? And how could he, you know, as a member of the royal family, how could he hang out with somebody like this? And how could he not know what Epstein was up to? And so Andrew did what is now a notorious car wreck of an interview with the BBC, where he did about just about everything wrong you could have done.
Do I regret the fact that he has quite obviously conducted himself in a manner unbecoming? Yes.
Unbecoming? He was a sex offender.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm being polite, in the sense that he was a sex offender.
It was just, everyone was watching it going, what? And it may well have been true, but it was just sort of so off the wall. And then I think the worst part, though, was that throughout this interview, at no point had anybody seemed to tell Andrew that the first thing he should have said was, I feel terribly about the victims of Jeffrey Epstein. Mm-hmm. And I want to apologize on the half, you know, and I'm sorry I ever spent any time with this guy. But it wasn't that kind of an interview. And so he actually made his situation much, much worse. And the answer for the royal family, for the Queen, was basically to say, you're retired. And she basically fired him. That's like really bad. Like, how bad do you have to be to get fired by your mom? And then sadly, to be honest, the best thing to come along for him was Megxit. Because then suddenly you go from the Andrew scandal and all the attention goes to Harry and Meghan.
Mm-hmm. Can you also kind of talk about Harry and Meghan's decision to step down as senior royals and your take on all of that?
I mean, Harry has never, if you watch him, if you listen to what he says, he's never felt comfortable in this kind of role. He's not a show horse. He's a much more down-to-earth kind of guy. And so that he would marry somebody so different as Meghan, in, I guess in some ways isn't a surprise. He used to date young, wealthy, glamorous girls. And I think people kind of here like that he seemed to be getting more serious and marrying somebody who had a career and things along those lines. But I don't know that he was likely to stay in that role for a long time. And then when she came along, it was pretty clear that even though it was a great wedding and it was beautifully done, you had to wonder, how's this going to work out? Here's an American woman who has her own public profile. Mm-hmm. She's giving up her acting career. She's marrying into, let's face it, a highly dysfunctional family.
Yes.
And taking on a role that is, frankly, objectively speaking, pretty boring.
Right.
You can't speak your mind. And for Americans, that's so hard. It's easier for Brits, easier for the English. But it's so hard for us because we love to talk and we love to say what's on our minds. And so I thought it was always going to be challenging. Now, there's some people at the time who said, this is perfect. She's an actress. And let's face it, this is just a show, The Royals. She could be great at this. But obviously, that's not the way it's worked out at all, because the British press will eat you alive. And she says she was naive. I live in London. I'm not surprised that she got it in the neck from the tabs.
Can you kind of tell us some of the things they've written about her and why do you think they, you know, were so hard on her?
Well, this is a great question and it's a very complex one.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
So in the beginning, people were intrigued by her, American, and obviously somebody so different from the rest of the family, mixed race, American, divorced. So initially, pretty positive coverage. The Daily Mail did talk about her background and had a notorious headline talking about her being sort of straight out of Compton, which of course is not true. She's not from Compton at all. But mostly it was not so negative. And then I got to say, everybody was wowed by the wedding. And so initially, I think things were pretty good. What became very clear to the tabloids here is that Meghan and Harry, particularly Meghan, was not going to kind of play into their game. The press realized that they weren't going to get the access they wanted. And they felt like, you know, if you're going to take the money and you're going to be a royal, you got to give us this stuff. This is a part of the unwritten contract between royals and the people in the press. And I think that they pretty much turned on her with a vengeance. Now, remember that they have done this in the past with other women who've come into the family.
Mm-hmm.
Diana had her ups and downs. Kate Middleton, when she came in, was initially portrayed as a social climber. So when Meghan came in, she was perceived to some degree as a social climber. And then when she didn't play the game the tabloids wanted, they turned on her. And it's been pretty unrelenting. And did you guys talk about this really great thing that BuzzFeed did? They did comparisons of how the tabloids treated both of them on the exact same topic?
Oh, yeah. We did not talk about that. I would love to.
Oh, let's talk about that. I have it up right up on my screen.
Okay. Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay. Well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh, yeah. The Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes. When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss.
Yeah.
And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen, and you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started.
Here's one from The Sun. Prince William blasts monarchy's stiff upper lip tradition and backs Harry's admission of his mental anguish. Then The Sun, Prince Harry and Meghan ditch British stiff upper lip. Is it a good thing?
Oh, wow.
Then there's another one here. This is The Express. Kate's morning sickness cure, Prince William gifted with an avocado for pregnant Duchess. Meghan Markle's beloved avocado linked to human rights abuse and drought, millennial shame.
Wow, that is worlds different.
So it's not just one or two cases. So it's pretty clear there's effectively a campaign against Meghan Markle.
Can you kind of take us behind the scenes of Harry and Meghan's decision to leave? I know they went to Canada to work out their exit strategy. Did they consult anyone, or kind of what was the process like leading up to that?
As I understand it, and take it with a grain of salt simply because there is no transparency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a little like covering the Kremlin in the 70s. But I think what happened is they did have a plan. They wanted to run it by members of the family. I think they felt like they weren't getting a lot of engagement and meetings. And then it leaked. And people here were not happy with how this became public because they love the Queen.
Yeah.
Most people. And they thought, oh my gosh, you should talk this through with the Queen and get some kind of agreement and then present it together. And it really, people were like, whoa, we're, you know, that's not the way you do things.
Now, were you surprised personally by Megxit, or did you kind of see it coming?
I was surprised at the way that they did it. I wasn't surprised that this wasn't going to work out, but I think everybody was shocked in the way in which it was done, which was to drop a bomb on social media. I mean, I remember the moment I saw it and I was like, oh my God, are you serious? They're leaving the royal family and this is how they're doing it? So yeah, I was surprised. But again, coming back to earlier what we talked about, there were a lot of reasons why this couple was probably not going to fit in too well. You know, given her background, given his antipathy for all the trapping, not all, some of the trappings of royal life, you could see why they might want to go off on their own, or at least try to.
Yeah.
But I think Meghan and Harry have divided people. I think there are also a lot of people here who feel that Meghan and Harry are trying to have it both ways. So they were part of the royal family, and then they wanted to take the royal brand. And let's face it, this is a business.
Yes.
You know, it's called, people inside, you know, they call it the firm.
The firm, yeah.
It is totally a business in nostalgia and show business and all of these different things and history. And a lot of people here, even people who might be sympathetic to Meghan on a personal level and like Harry personally, would say, you can't be a royal, dump your duties, and then go out and monetize the brand. What's interesting about Meghan and Harry is they're trying to go out and do something very different. And it's totally uncertain as to whether they're going to be able to pull it off.
Yeah. Can you kind of talk us through how the family responded or has responded since the announcement?
Well, the family has tried to put a brave face on it, but it's clearly quite strained. And the last time that William and Harry saw each other were in Westminster Abbey for Commonwealth Day celebrations, and they barely greeted each other. I guess the Times of London employed a lip reader to read the lips.
Wow.
And if I don't have it in front of me, but effectively, you know, Harry seemed very put off by this. Like, here he is seeing his brother, who hadn't seen in you know, quite a few weeks, and a lot has happened. And there was no real exchange. And, you know, beyond the kind of interest that people have in a dysfunctional family that's very famous and high profile, this is profoundly sad. These are two brothers who have been through a lot together. after the loss of their mother, they really only had each other. And to see them estranged now is just painful. At a human level, regardless of what family they're in, given their own personal history, that's hard to watch.
Yeah, yeah, I think we can all agree on that. Now, we talked a little bit already about Harry and Meghan and how they want to become financially independent. What does that look like for them, them being financially independent and on their own?
Well, at the moment, I don't think that they can be on their own. I don't know exactly what their expenses are, but they don't live simply. And the way it's working now is they basically are funded in part by what's called the sovereign grant. They don't get very much from that. It's a small amount of money that comes from what's called the Crown Estate, which are all these, a lot of them are real estate holdings that the Queen has by virtue of being the Queen. The rest of the money comes from the Duchy of Cornwall, which is under the control, effectively, of Prince Charles. And what's been problematic about the way this has played out for Meghan and Harry and the royal family is you never want the British people and the taxpayers focusing on how the royal family is funded.
Yes. You know,
it's not a winner. The best thing to do is to just put on great shows, great weddings, things like that, and not have people focusing too much on all the money that goes into it. Not that it's, you know, ridiculous, but just that it is an anachronism, and the idea that a lot of money is going to fund an anachronism, it's just not it's a PR loser.
Right.
And so this has focused new attention on how they are funded. So I'm not 100% sure, but I think Prince Charles is basically going to help bankroll them for the next year. And I think the next 12 months are going to be really interesting. Can they become financially independent? Because that's what they said they wanted to do. But it's not obvious that they can do that and do that also in the lifestyle to which Harry has always been accustomed and to a lesser extent, Meghan Markle has been accustomed to.
Do you think that Harry and Meghan leaving will kind of have implications for the stability of the crown and the future of the monarchy in general?
I think the monarchy has been definitely rocked by Prince Andrew and Meg's it.
Yeah.
I don't think they've been good. I think people here think that the monarchy will be in good hands with William and Kate. They're good at what they do. They're personable. They understand their roles very well. The next up, of course, is going to be Prince Charles, who is not popular.
Right.
That period of time that he's going to be as king is going to be hard. Because he's not going to have the deep connection that his mother has mm-hmm. with most of the people in this country. And that'll be a tricky time. I mean, I'm sure that there are some people in the royal family who think just, you know, from a business perspective, the best thing to do would be to abdicate. But of course, Charles has waited forever. He's not going to abdicate.
Yeah.
I mean, he's waited so long
yeah.
for this opportunity. Yeah. He's not going anywhere.
Why isn't he popular there?
I think people do blame him for the failure of that marriage. He was having an affair with a married woman, and Diana was somebody that he just had to marry because it's what looked right. I don't think people felt he treated her very well, and obviously it became a very bitter relationship and divorce. But I think people blame him part for that, and I also think at a personal level, I think Charles is quite bright in some ways. I think he's a bright fellow. But also if you watch The Crown, you know, he's not all that well suited for this job necessarily. He's introverted. He doesn't warm up to people and people don't warm up to him too much. I don't think he's like a really bad guy at all. I just don't think that he has that kind of connection that a regent needs to do their job.
Okay, so I kind of want to wrap this all up with your thoughts on the future of the tabloids. Like, I know we've talked about the headlines that they wrote about Meghan, and they were kind of tough on Diana for a while. Do you think that Meghan and Harry leaving will change that relationship? Do you think maybe they're maybe going to take a step back and kind of soften how they approach people? Or do you think it's just going to be brutal?
No, I don't think so. I think they are who they are.
Okay.
And they've been this way. It's just, it's in their DNA.
Yeah.
And they do it because it grabs eyeballs and it's very effective. Mm-hmm. The tabloids and readers like nothing better than a great story. And a prince who runs off from the family with his new bride yeah. is a great story.
It is a good one. Well, I'm extremely interested, and I hope they get a little bit of an easier go at it now that they're out of there, but we will see.
I think a lot of people here do think that it will be nice for them to not be right in the middle of the action here in Greater London.
Frank, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us all of this. It was absolutely fascinating. A lot of stuff I didn't know, so our listeners probably didn't know either. We really appreciate it.
It was great to do. It was a lot of fun to talk. Thanks, Brooke.
Thanks. Have a good one. Frank Langfitt is NPR's London correspondent. He's also the author of Shanghai Free Taxi. When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals more easily and still have the occasional treat.
Exactly. And Chime's here to help you do that. With a Chime checking account, you can make financial progress with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe or getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit.
Yep. So if you set up direct deposit into your Chime account and use an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to your limit when you exceed your balance.
And I love that Chime never charges fees or interest for using SpotMe. To date, Chime has spotted members over $20 billion.
My God. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/rich. That's chime.com/rich.
Chime feels like progress.
Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10 to get your Magnesium Breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10.
Well, hello, Michaela. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me on. How are you guys?
We're so excited to have you. As you know, we've been covering Meghan Markle and Princess Diana. So we thought it would be so great to talk to you. You're a royals reporter at Insider, which truly sounds like the coolest job ever. So does that mean you've always been interested in the royal family or?
No, I was always interested in the royals. Like I loved Diana. And then when Kate married into the family, and then obviously Meghan was quite recent when I started. But yeah, it was just one of those things that I had always loved them, but never had the opportunity to write about them until this position.
Yeah, what a great opportunity. So I read through some of your pieces, all very interesting. Can you tell me some of the most interesting stories you've written? I have my votes, but I'm curious for you, from your perspective, what have been some of the most interesting stories?
Oh, wow. There's been quite a lot in recent times, because obviously with them leaving the royal family, or Mexit as people like to call it. it's been quite fun because I get to, you know, speak to former employees of the palace. I did one big feature where I got a bunch of different former and current Buckingham Palace employees, and they all kind of gave me the inside scoop of what it's like behind the palace walls, and, you know, lots of kind of little details that you wouldn't really, you know, imagine when you think about what it's like to work for the Queen.
So I have to ask, what was the most interesting thing that they shared about working for the Queen?
Oh, well, I interviewed this one lady who was, she's a facialist. She does skincare. It wasn't actually, I don't think she's actually worked with the Queen, but she has worked with the Duchess of Cornwall, Prince Charles's wife. And it was quite funny because during the interview, she was telling me about how the Duchess made her a cup of coffee and she was saying, wow, like you would think it would be, you know, some sort of staff member that would do it, but she offered me the coffee herself, and I'm not sure if I'm even supposed to say this, but you know, that's the gossip. Things like that, the worry that about, you know, whether it's okay to disclose that a royal made you like a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. I found that really, really funny.
It would be crazy. I mean, how many people get to say, yep, the Duchess made me tea? I don't think many. This might sound like a dumb question, but do you know any royals?
Well, if you'd asked me that question a few weeks ago, I would have said no. But actually, recently, I got to interview a Greek prince.
The one that went undercover. Is that the one?
Yes. It's Nicholas of Greece and Denmark. I wrote a story on him about how he worked at Fox News in New York and nobody knew who he was and he used a fake name. So, he was a pretty cool guy. He was pretty chill during the interview as well. I thought he would be a bit more, you know, strict on what he was able to disclose, but he was really lovely. And even after the interview, he said to me, you know, feel free if you want to, you know, text me on WhatsApp and to arrange, you know, getting some pictures for the piece and stuff. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Royals, they're just like us.
Royal and WhatsApp.
I mean, that's crazy to WhatsApp with a royal. Wow. That's so cool. Okay. So, Michaela, can you talk me through what your day to day is like? Are you hanging around Buckingham Palace or are you on phones with the members of the royal court? How does the day look for you?
I wish I was hanging around Buckingham Palace, but no. So I feel like it's kind of hard to explain the day to day because obviously it changes really quickly depending on what's going on, you know, in the news cycle at that moment in time. But normally I'm based in the office in London. Will and Kate do quite a lot of like charity events and things. So a few times I've been able to get out of the office and go and watch them, which is pretty cool.
Royal reporting has been around for a very long time, obviously. How has it changed over the years? Like here in the States, the way American royalty, obviously we don't have royals, but people like the Kennedy families or big celebrities in the past, there was a respect about it. But that's unfortunately changed a lot here. You get like these reports where people are taking very long range shots of celebrities on their private balconies, things like that. How has royal reporting changed for you guys?
Well, for me, I see a lot of patterns with the things that the younger royals are going through. I've heard stories about similar things that did happen to like the likes of Charles and Diana. So I actually don't think it's changed too much. So it's quite like history repeating itself, actually.
Yeah, which is just given how everything ended with Diana, it's so tragic that things have not changed. Mm-hmm. I know that in October, you wrote an article comparing Meghan's treatment in the press to Diana's. I assume what triggered that was just how there are so many similarities and how Diana's life ended so tragically. But I'm curious, what prompted you to write that piece?
Well, one thing that prompted us, the main thing was Harry's statement, if you remember, when it was announced that Meghan was taking legal action. He had compared her treatment to Diana and he had said that he was watching history repeat itself, which was obviously quite sad and no one wants to hear that, especially if, like, you know, me being like a member of the press and being a royal reporter, to hear that, you know, this is something that's driving them away and wanting them to take this action. So yeah, it was mainly that. And then when we look back at all the kind of parallels between the two, there was quite a few, but obviously quite a few ways that they were different as well.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about how the press treated Diana? I mean, how they covered her, because we have just about everyone, I feel like, knows the story of when she died and how, you know, it was press that were trying to get that shot. But how generally did they go about covering Diana and news about Diana?
Well, a few of the, you know, the journalists that I've spoken to who were, you know, they were still reporting at that time when Diana was big. So many people have said that they've not seen anything like the way that Diana was treated. Like, even though there's the comparison to Meghan, a lot of people say, you know, it was on another level with her and the amount that she was followed and reported on, and, you know, photographers, like, you know, finding her on holiday and trying to take pictures when she's on her own kind of private, you know, outings and things. But yeah, I think Diana was maybe a little bit more chummy with the media. Of course, I don't know how true those reports are, but I do know, Meghan, she's not really to that extent. I mean, I know she has her own reporters that she favours, because, you know, at her last event that she did at Buckingham Palace, she only invited, I think it was maybe three specific reporters from publications, and she never put anything out to the rest of the press.
I do wonder, because she had, as you know, she had some celebrity status before all of this with Suits. And so I wonder if she kind of took that experience with paparazzi and the press from that, and kind of took in what she had seen happen with Diana and how she's approaching the press.
That is interesting. I mean, people assume that because she was on a TV show that she would have had that experience, but I genuinely think it was probably quite a shock to her still when she actually got, you know, in the midst of the role here.
Yeah. So you sound sympathetic to Harry and Meghan wanting to live their lives how they want to live them. How do most people in the UK feel about their announcement about Megxit?
Most people that I've spoken to who are from here and they're young and they seem to love Harry and Meghan, but, you know, I think it might be, obviously, the British press, it's a lot of older men, and you know, I couldn't say for sure if there's a, you know, correlation between gender, age, or, you know, people that have some sort of issue with them. But yeah, just from my experience, the people that I know are fans, but obviously that's not the case for everyone, which is a shame.
The people that aren't in support of this, if you know, what is their justification for it? Why are they against them leaving?
Well, in fact, I don't even know why people would have an issue with them leaving, because the people that had the issue with them leaving are the same people that had an issue with them being there in the first place and using taxpayer money. So really, I don't think they do. I think that people just need to let them live their lives and not worry about it.
Yeah, that should be a lesson for everybody, to just live your own life and not worry about other people.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, switching gears a little bit. Can you tell me, how did you feel when you heard about Megxit?
Well, my first initial thought was I wasn't in the office, so I was just, I don't even think I read the full Instagram post. I have their posts on, like, a, you know, you can get notifications on your phone.
Right.
So I just saw, like, the first line and I was like, oh my goodness, I have to send this to the office. And then it was just like adrenaline. It was just go, go, go. And then when I sat down to read it, I don't think it actually hit me. Like, I didn't think they were actually leaving. Like, I just thought, you know, oh, like, it's probably just like a little kind of vacation, like a step back, you know, this probably just means that they're taking a little hiatus. So yeah, I think I was in a bit of denial.
Obviously, being an American, I'm so far removed from royal life and how it all plays out. But in my head, it's like, no, they're still there. Like, they're still going to be, they're just on a long Canadian vacation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We can keep thinking that way. Maybe they'll return one day.
Yeah. So I did see reports that the royal family was shocked by Harry and Meghan's announcement. Mm-hmm. Which would suggest that they didn't include them when they were making this decision. They didn't talk it out. Why do you think they would do that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I believe that, you know, there was talks going on, you know, of how they could carve out, you know, a new role for themselves. And at first, it wasn't clear that they were completely leaving.
Yeah.
And, you know, they assumed that they would be able to just, you know, take a step back and just take on, you know, less royal roles, but they would still be considered working royals. They would just have their own, you know, individual projects as well. And then obviously the Queen said that they wouldn't be able to do that and they would have to, you know, step back completely. But it's kind of similar to Diana, because I don't know if you remember, but when she was finalizing her divorce with Prince Charles, there was a statement made by her spokesperson that had said, you know, she's going to retain her title and be known as Diana, Princess of Wales. And at the time, the palace made a statement after that, kind of like the statement they made after Harry and Meghan's post. And they had said, you know, that this is something that has to be looked over and discussed. But basically, it kind of seemed like they were blindsided by Diana as well, kind of as if they maybe hadn't discussed it before and she was just deciding it, kind of like Harry and Meghan. So maybe it's just more so like Harry has Diana's kind of like independent, like fiery spirit. And, you know, he's just, you know, doing what he wants to do and isn't asking for permission.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've noticed is in basically all of our, every time we've mentioned Meghan, we mention Harry. He's always there. He's supporting whatever choice she makes, whatever she wants to do. But I feel like from what I've read and learned about Diana, Charles wasn't really supporting Diana.
Yeah, it's obviously they had a lot of drama and their mm-hmm. marriage and the way it ended was pretty messy. But I think that's one thing as well, that people, they criticize Meghan and blame her for a lot of things and say that, you know, it's her fault that, you know, her and Harry are leaving, as if Harry doesn't have a voice of his own. And at the same time, I think, you know, what's so wrong with a husband supporting yeah. his wife? You know, I think it would be terrible if he'd said, no, like, you're in this for the long haul, like, you're not getting out of it that easy, you know?
I mean, it's one of those things where if it was in a rom-com, people would love this character. They'd be like, oh, he's such a, you know, he's such a good man. He's supporting his wife. But then you throw it into reality and it's like, oh, how, like, she's taking care of him. She's telling him what to do. This is terrible. And it's like, come on. That's what you want in a partnership. You want your partner to support you and your choices.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I think that they need to be united and show a united front. And it's just a shame that people are trying to, you know, pick that apart.
Yeah. Ugh. People can be so cruel. So can you explain, just talk a little bit about the deal that Meghan and Harry ultimately worked out with the Queen, about Megxit and them leaving the family, the firm?
So one of the main things that they've worked out with the firm is that basically it's going to be a 12-month review period over their, you know, Megxit, over they're going to come back in a year and look at, you know, their financial situation and what they're doing, and obviously everything that would have happened up until then with them. They're going to obviously pay back the taxpayers for their Frogmore cottage home. So I think it's basically just a yearly window if they decide that they want to come back. And we don't really know what their plans are, but we do know that it's going to be monitored closely. And I think they're still probably going to be working with the palace behind the scenes. And I think they probably will have a lot of support still.
Okay. So is there any clue as to what they're going to be doing to kind of fund their new life?
I feel like they could do anything they wanted, whether that be, you know, a book deal, or there's rumors that, you know, Meghan could go back into acting and voiceover work and things like that. So I think that, you know, the world is their oyster. So hopefully we'll see them do something fun.
Yeah, I hope so. So do you think that Harry and Meghan leaving, do you think that this is a sign that maybe the royal family as we know it isn't going to be around for much longer? Like, is this the beginning of a change that's coming? Or is this just a fluke and everything will stay as it is?
I don't know. I feel like it's a possibility for sure. But the experts that I've spoken to have said that they think that it should be fine. So only time will tell.
Do you think that this will help Meghan and Harry be happier?
Yeah, 100%. I think so. I feel like you can even see it, like when they came back for their final engagements. And I don't know if you saw that picture of them in the rain.
In the blue dress. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, it's so romantic.
It's like, true. Oh, my goodness. They were just like, radiating happiness, it seemed, in their faces.
Yeah, and all the dark and the gloomy behind them, and they were just glowing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think if that picture is anything to go by, I think it seems like they're in a pretty good place.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. That picture, I just looked at that. Like, wow, okay. They made a decision they're very happy with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all I have. Michaela, thank you so much for giving me your time and talking about the royals. This has been a ton of fun.
Thank you. It's been great being here.
Michaela Friel is the royals reporter at Insider.
Big, big thanks to Michaela Friel and Frank Langfitt.
Before we leave Meghan and Diana behind, what is your biggest takeaway about going from commoner to royalty?
I think the biggest takeaway for me just talking to Frank was that it's really a mixed bag over there. Like, to me, Meghan seems very strong and Harry seems strong for supporting her. And I love that.
Yeah.
And it's just his, like, because he's in there. He's on the ground. He sees how the British people are reacting.
Yeah.
And
Frank's think it's, on the front lines.
It, like, you can't win over there, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, it seems sad.
I know.
What about you?
So for me, it was just Meghan dealing with the shit of being, like, marrying into the royal family. Like, we were talking a little bit about the African documentary and I, like, had made the comment. I was like, she was on Suits, so she knows what it's like to have, like, paparazzi and press.
Yeah.
And she's also watched everything that happened with Princess Diana, like so many people in America did. So wouldn't that make her more prepared to go and, to like handle.
Yeah.
And then in that documentary that you so lovingly told us about at the very beginning, she's like, I didn't expect this. And it's like, if she couldn't be prepared for that and it's tearing her apart, like, ugh.
Yeah, I don't think you can be prepared for it.
I will say, I don't know if you remember this, but when we first heard Meghan and Harry were getting married.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, that could have been me.
Yes, I did.
And you were like, no, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. Like, that was like one of the first, and I was like, what are you talking about? This is amazing. But you knew.
I did. We were just like Meghan and her friend.
Oh my God, we were.
Okay, guys. So next week, we've got a brand new series about one of the most influential, power hungry, and scandalous families around, the Murdochs. I don't know how much you know about them.
I know some things about them. He's been married more than once.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe three times. He was the head of a very big media conglomerate, and I am tapping out now because I don't know anything else.
That's okay, because I'm going to tell you everything next week. And just a tease, Rupert Murdoch is now 89 years old, and he's supposed to retire one of these days. So his kids are fighting to see who will take the reins.
This is the end of our series, Diana to Meghan, From Commoner to Royalty. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Wondery.com, or wherever you're listening now. If you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast, where you'll find some offers from our sponsors. By supporting them, you help us offer you this show for free.
And if you like what you're hearing, we'd love you to give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. We'd love to know your thoughts. Another way to support us is to answer a short survey at wondery.com/survey. I'm Brooke Sifrin.
And I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Marshall Louie, and Hernan Lopez. For Wondery.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.